Do you lead an organization, a business, a company, a nonprofit? Imagine if your people delivered truly inspired performance day in and day out. Well, it can happen. The challenge lies in knowing what motivates your people. That's where SEMA International comes in. They unlock the mystery and the magic of human motivation. To learn more, visit SEMAInternational.com. S-I-M-A International. For 50 years, they're experts in retained search, talent management, and personalized coaching. Check out SEMAInternational.com. Welcome again here on Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. And someone I like to carve paths with, my colleague from SEMA International, Marlis Hansen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Zara.
Well, it's been a quick month since we last chatted, and a lot on your plate, that's for sure. Welcome home, right, to California, too.
Thank you, and welcome to you, too. I know you've been on vacation as well.
I know. Well, like we were saying, we pay for it after the fact, don't we?
That's for sure.
So for our listeners, that means the two of us are raring to go, okay? Well, Marlis, last July, we picked up on the subject of talking about job crafting, this idea of truly fitting the pieces of your capability as best you can in collaboration with others in your work environment, whether it be your supervisor, your peers, or your mentors. But that when we step back and do that, we want to make sure this isn't about just trying to find boxes to put square pegs in or round pegs and round holes, et cetera, but it's to do it in the spirit of understanding how people are individually motivated or individually gifted, right?
Right. Absolutely. Really pay attention to that uniqueness.
And in fact, in absence of doing that, then you end up quite typically with performance problems. And so our topic last month was kind of launch us on the way of understanding some of the most common performance problems that really are a result of not paying attention to the dynamics of job fit. So let me just do a quick recap. We had a great conversation on the first four, so we want to pick up from number five on. The first one was to make sure that the subject matter is a fit to the interests and passions of the person. The second was, and while that sounds obvious, sometimes we miss the point, don't we?
And it's, as we said before, it's the one that's most difficult to deal with if there's not a fit. Some of these other items, you know, can be addressed with different techniques or even just understanding. But if the subject matter doesn't fit, it's very difficult to make that, you know, make that job work for a person.
And in fact, some of the examples we pulled upon, this isn't necessarily meaning that you hired the person without being cognizant of the subject matter, but that more so in the course of our career, as we take on different responsibilities or we shift within a given organization, we might find ourselves having involved into something that really takes us away from our passion. You know, the example that a teacher who eventually gets promoted to be an administrator and suddenly finds that they really don't have the joy for the job.
Right. Or a designer that gets moved into an analyst role.
Right.
Or vice versa.
Right. And then the second point about this performance issue is that the manager's not motivated to provide the level of structure and definition the employee needs to be engaged and motivated. So again, our topic today is not just what's, quote, wrong with the employee, but what else also could be addressed with the fit. So our second topic we talked about was this whole idea of truly the manager needing to be oriented to do just that, to manage.
Yes, and if not, if that's not the case, then both the supervisor and the employee need to, you know, devise some system for dealing with that. You know, like each of them may be preparing a draft of what the employee's responsibilities are or priorities are for the week, and, you know, using some technique to manage that limitation.
Exactly. So we had subject matter, management motivation, and then third, that the job role requires more influencing skills than the employee may exhibit. A common problem, right?
And a very, you know, impactful one. We quickly can see when that's a problem with, an employee situation.
And then I think we talked about how one of the best strategies to deal with that is to be very open to look to how to team up with someone else, you know, whereas you might be really good at initiating and suggesting ideas or convincing, persuading. If you find yourself in a situation that really needs hardline negotiating, selling or closing, then maybe you team up with someone who that comes to them naturally.
Right. Or look at, you know, long term, a different kind of career strategy.
Precisely.
Because, you know, it's just not something that you're going to become. even with training, it doesn't turn a person into a highly motivated seller or, negotiator.
Yeah, in fact, you find yourself really as a fish out of water. I think many times I've seen that people who pursue careers because they were heavily influenced by what another family member did, you know, whether it be a parent who with the best of intentions is saying, I think you'd make a great engineer because XYZ, and, you know, that really is not perhaps will serve the individual well.
Happens all the time. I was speaking yesterday with an individual who has an interesting title. She's the Dean of Student Emotional Health, and I'd not heard that title at a prominent engineering school. And she was telling about the nature of the problems that students come to her, you know, to present, usually at the end of their freshman year, beginning of their sophomore year, when they find themselves majoring in disciplines that really don't fit them. And so many of them, you know, she said, ended up there because of a parent or another adult that, they really admired or had a really successful career, and so they chose that without really looking at how it fit them.
Well, the fourth area then we were able to sneak in under the wire the first time we taught was this idea that the employee finds himself in a supervisory or a managerial role when, in fact, they're really not motivated to work with or through others. That's a real caught.
Yes, and as we both know, those kinds of fit situations have so much impact on not only the individual, but on the people that report to them, and on the organizational function as well. So that's a fit issue that has so many implications.
Yeah, and I think our comment here was it's not that the supervisor who's been sanctioned doesn't have a desire to get there, but actually the way they best serve the company has always traditionally been in a star individualistic role. They're the top technical person, for example. And so to expect they would then broaden themselves in other ways, actually you're going to rob the environment of really their key talent where you also would need them.
They always, used to be a popular saying. I still hear it once in a while. You know, you take a good talented engineer, and then you end with a poor fit move, you end up with a poor manager. So you lose the engineer and gain a poor manager. Now, we have to be careful not to stereotype here, because
exactly.
As you know, there are many, many engineers who also have very, excellent motivation for management. So but you can't tell who's who by just looking around, right?
Yes, and it would not be just the engineer, but commonly there's concerns about people in the health profession, nurses and doctors that don't have leadership and management skills. So that isn't everybody, but
right.
What we're suggesting here is that how can we help people walk in with your eyes open? Or if
right.
you find yourself stuck in these situations, how can you, in a humane, empathetic way, kind of back out of it?
And to really understand, where the nature of their passion is, to just, as we always say, go back and look at what you've enjoyed doing and felt you've done well. I mean, it isn't rocket science that is needed here in order to make a determination. It's pretty easy to tell. If you list 8-10 things in your life that you've enjoyed doing and felt you've done well, and you've done them all by yourself, pretty much, you've got the picture, right?
That's right. But, it does take courage to get ourselves out of a certain path, particularly if there was influences to keep us there.
Yes.
Well, let's move on then to the next few that we've got on our roster. Number 5 was that an employee is motivated by the response from or interaction with others, and that she and he, though, are currently in a behind-the-scenes role that doesn't give them the chance to exercise that capability.
Yes, and this employee, sometimes I meet because they have become a problem employee in some way. Because the individual seeks this interaction, they're frustrated maybe working behind a computer somewhere or in a laboratory where they don't have a lot of interaction, or maybe in a distribution or production kind of role where it's primarily systems and data. So much is done via computer today that so many people end up, just sitting in front of a screen. And I'll tell you, they can get really frustrated. And we'll start, we'll try to find ways to engage their colleagues, and may even become, a bothersome or cynical or troublesome, anything to sort of get some reaction or get some attention. Now, we know that people with this motivation for response make excellent teachers because they really go after their students. You know, they want a response. They make good salesmen usually because they, you know, get a response from their customer. So it's often finding a role where they can be engaged either with a customer or with their colleagues or with clients in some way. They can experience that interface and not be, you know, denied that because they it will definitely impact their performance.
And so one of my responses to this, by the way, when I find and coach and try to get people out from underneath that in the backroom mushroom, I would call it, is to nonetheless give them the opportunity to contribute to then improving the process of what they do, if that's something they're wired to do. Sometimes special projects that would put them in a cross-functional team, so it legitimizes that need. But I think you and I would both also say is to have the employee really look hard at what they do in their 5-9 life, because perhaps what they would do in their, you know, in their community service area, supporting their kids' school, et cetera, could let some of that otherwise passion bubble up too.
Yeah, in the short term. Long term, they really need to address the fact that their best performance and their personal satisfaction is going to come from a role where they have some, you know, interface most of the time.
Exactly. Yeah. The next one, number 6, was the you've listed here, the employee is motivated by learning to perform a task in a role and then demonstrating that competence, but that sometimes that could get used up and now they're not in a learning environment.
Well, we certainly see these folks in the job market very frequently. Often, just by looking at their resume, you'll find that they change jobs every 2 or 3 years, and if they stay at one organization, they will change responsibilities, you know, probably every a year and a half or so, because they do tend to use up, we call it. They learn what is required to perform the job and then perform that, and then they're ready for something new. Now, ideally, people with this motivation make good fits in professions that have a natural, you know, need for learning. The discipline changes so rapidly that it really feeds that appetite. And we find many of them very successfully in professions like science or computers or even, you know, there's so much computer technology in almost everything. There's, you know, constant learning there. Marketing sometimes that has a lot of, you know, new markets to get into. Any place where there's, you know, it's always something new that requires learning and demonstration and doesn't confine the person to routine or maintenance roles where they exhaust the learning and then are just expected to repeat the performance. I mean, that is really deadly for people who are, you know, learners and demonstrators. They don't want to just repeat over and over again what they've learned. Now, it can be frustrating for their employer who, you know, feels that just about the time the person learns a job, they're ready for something else.
Exactly, yeah.
But it also can be frustrating to the families. Sometimes we find spouses or parents that don't understand this motivation, and they say, what's wrong with this person that they can't settle down? Especially spouses sometimes who are faced with moving or, you know, career changes, and they just, you know, the person has a really good job. Why don't they just do the job and, you know, enjoy the paycheck and the benefits? And where the individual is saying, I just have to have something where I can learn and demonstrate and then move on to more learning.
So what you're saying here, it isn't just the choice of profession or the discipline that you're in, but rather also getting a really good read on the culture of the company and their desire to allow and actually encourage a certain set of employees to indeed take those kind of moves, whether they be cross-functional or special projects or be open to internal job posting processes. Because if you're in a company where the supervisors kind of hoard their talent, then you're probably not going to be happy there.
That's a very good point. And some organizations that have their jobs so rigidly defined in terms of responsibilities that's really, you know, equated very closely to the compensation system. They're just not as supportive of individuals going out and finding new things to learn or do because, of course, it impacts the compensation structure.
Right.
So if you're a person that's highly motivated to learn, you know, watch out for that in a company that is that restrictive, because it ties your hands behind your back, so to speak, in terms of learning.
That's right. The next one was that an employee might find themselves working with a subject matter, this is back to your number one point, that's really too conceptual or abstract for how they're motivated, that they really like to be very anchored in tactical things.
Right, and that they have a sufficient definition,
right,
or tangibility to the subject matter that they can really get their hands on it, get their arms around it, and are really frustrated by both the abstractness, or maybe it's a blank sheet kind of thing where they're really expected to come in and bring that definition and that structure to something. So it's probably first or second on the list of what really causes performance problems. And it's kind of coupled with this one we talked about earlier, where the manager is not sufficiently motivated to provide definition or structure to that subject matter. So it leaves the employee not knowing what to do, is what it amounts to. And so then they tend to procrastinate. They tend to move in other directions than what the company expects. And it's a tough one to deal with. Sometimes that can be addressed by working more in applications rather than in design. And
exactly,
we see this,
yeah,
especially with IT people and with engineers as well, that they can move more to an applications role than to initiating a design or creating.
Right. The eighth one, Marlis, we'd spoken earlier about this idea that certain employees are really motivated for a response, and thus being in a behind-the-scenes role can be a gotcha. But then the flip of that if an employee is really motivated to make an impact or really make big differences, but if they find themselves now in a low-profile or a low-impact role or a project that really, to their liking, doesn't hit the big ball out of the park.
Right, and or into a really constrained role,
yeah,
where they don't have much, you know, basically much impact on a breadth of a function or an operation.
That's right.
And again, we meet these individuals sometimes when they have, kind of stepped into a negative territory, really desiring impact, but they've kind of started to step on their colleagues' toes, or maybe even their supervisors, as they seek to take on more than what their job may be defined to do.
Right. We've got one more on the list in but 30
okay.
seconds, so we'll mention
right.
it. And that was when we find employees who are highly evaluative, that are really good at technical analysis. However, that can also get in the way and impede others then.
Yes, and if as an employee you find yourself always offering a criticism or finding a fault with, or having, you know, a lot of somewhat negative kinds of input on issues, think of yourself as possibly being in this category, because this constant negative feedback really can be irritating to colleagues and
right,
supervisors.
And get in the way of your succeeding to the next level. Marlis,
yeah,
thanks
absolutely.
For joining us again. We'll catch up probably with the part three to continue this great stream on job fit and job crafting. Stick with us, folks, then. We'll continue with our show. Thank you, Marlis.
Thank you, Zara.
You bet. Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.